everybody. Welcome to Navigating the Course to College, MEFA's podcast. My name is Jonathan Hughes. I'm the Associate Director of College Planning and Education at MEFA. And with me, as always, is...
Hi, everyone. Jonathan Sperling, also Associate Director of College Planning and Education here at MEFA.
Well, well, well. Just two Associate Directors of College Planning and Education. What do you know? Well, this is our lone episode today because that's what time of year we're in. This is the point where people are going to start looking at loans and want to know all about which kind of loans they should apply for and what the processes are. But we're going to look at our mailbag and look at some questions from parents and students, probably about loans, spoiler alert. But before that, even as always, there's a lot of news in terms of colleges and what they're doing as far as opening in the fall is concerned. So we'll have our news from Jonathan. What's going on?
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, a lot continuing to happen on college campuses, certainly given where we are in the midst of the pandemic. You know, in a normal year, there'd be a lot happening in this time frame, just as schools opening up, moving back in. You know, fall sports are starting, you know, kind of normal things. And certainly some of that is still happening. Some of it is not happening. Some of it is happening in a hybrid format. So, you know, one of the big things that we're seeing and we continue to see are college plans for the fall. So, you know, in general, more colleges, what we're seeing are opting for a virtual or hybrid fall semester versus fully in person, and this holds true even for those colleges who had initially planned to be fully on campus. You know, we see this every day. There's a new article. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. The Chronicle of Higher Education is tracking what their plans are. As of today, they were up to about almost 1,400 schools, and you can see that the percentage is shifting. Right, so. Even 3 weeks ago, about 65% were planning to be fully in person. Now that's down to under 50%. So as more schools are announcing their plans, the plans tend to be either some hybrid approach or fully online. And we're also seeing that some schools have walked back their fall plans, right? So in states that are seeing cases spike, or perhaps there's been more discussion on campus, schools are that may have once said, yep, we're going to be in person for fall, are actually walking that back. So continue to learn more about that. And it's kind of a daily thing. Now for students and families, you know, they are receiving from what we've heard and what we've seen and some of our colleagues who have children who are going to college, they're getting emails and kind of, you know, things are changing on a minute by minute basis. So yeah, it's really interesting what we're seeing, and it's continuing to happen. And then even for those schools that are going to be on campus, you know, the experience is going to look certainly very different this year, you know, so a lot of schools are requiring students to sign some type of contract to maintain social distancing, agree to testing. You're going to have reduced class size, as well as kind of more spread out residence halls, modified campus events. So it's going to look a lot different on college campuses, if even for those who decide to open.
Now, yeah, one question I had about that is, and I think we may have actually talked about this on a prior show, but if we did, the colleges that do offer virtual classes or not, you know, accepting students physically on campus, are they reducing tuition for their students for the fall semester in those cases?
So many are not. We're finding that, and what we're seeing is that, you know, schools are essentially adhering to the fact that it's going to be the same type of, the same content is going to be there, taught by the same professors, kind of, you know, they're moving virtual, but that doesn't change. It obviously changes the instruction, but it doesn't change kind of who's delivering it. And so a lot of campuses are holding true to maintaining the same tuition. Now, there are some exceptions, as you can imagine, those schools with very large endowments that have the means to reduce some tuition, or reduce some costs are doing it. And then some others who may, quite frankly, are concerned about enrollment. And so they're using mm-hmm. it as a way to keep students there. So yeah, kind of a mixed bag, but in general, most are not reducing the tuition costs. Now for families, and since this is about student loans, you know, certainly if you're deciding to, if your school said, we're gonna go hybrid, you will incur less costs because you, if you were planning to be on campus, you would have room and board costs and you won't have those being virtual.
Right, right, of course. Yeah, the fees would definitely be lower in that, in those cases. Okay, anything else? We were talking maybe about sports.
Yeah. So the other, you know, the other big piece besides just kind of everything that's happening on college campuses in terms of plans and, you know, hybrid versus virtual versus in-person is the impact of all this on fall sports. You're seeing more from all divisions, Division 1, 2, and 3 announced that either fall sports are being canceled completely or shifted to spring. For those who aren't canceling, they are keeping them within the division so that kind of minimizing how much travel will be done. Seems like on a daily basis, again, you know, all this is continually moving. And, you know, what's really interesting is that, you know, I assumed, and Jonathan, I know you assumed, and we all kind of assumed at me for that, you know, it's today's August 5th. This would have been signed, sealed, and delivered, right? Kind of plans would have been out there. Everything would have been figured out. And certainly the schools, I would imagine, would have hoped that would have been the case too, you know, because it's kind of a, you know, a constantly evolving thing, but it really isn't. It's we're learning new things every day, and the same applies to fall sports. And so, you know, we are seeing more conferences opt out or cancel seasons. Just today, I heard that UConn announced that there will be no football for the upcoming fall season. And so I believe that there might be one of the first D1 programs to announce a complete no football.
Wow.
If not the first, maybe, you know, right up there. So yeah, I mean, you're seeing the impact on fall sports. You know, one thing we will say, and that schools have been pretty good about, is that for student athletes, those who are on athletic scholarships, really just checking with the school to seeing kind of what's going on. We've heard that most schools are honoring them. But again, that's going to be a school by school basis.
Yeah, that was my question. What happens to those students who accepted on the basis of an athletic scholarship? So it's good to know that most of those colleges are able to honor that and are doing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? The next time we talk, things could be different. Yet again. Mm-hmm. That kind of an environment. But thank you very much. So it's important to keep these updates coming. And we're going to close this now and go to our mailbag, open up our old mailbag here. And first question, these are questions that come to us either through email, which, by the way, the email address, if you have questions, is collegeplanning@mefa.org. The phone number is 1-800-449-MEFA. You know, the bulk of what we do in this college planning department is talk to families and students and answer their questions and try to get them through this path through college. So if you have any questions, please do not be shy to contact us in any way that's convenient for you to do so. Now, the first question comes to us from Andrew, and he writes to us, I currently have a loan with MEFA as a co-borrower for my daughter's undergraduate loan. I would like to borrow for the upcoming semester. How do I go about adding to the current loan? So this is a common question that comes up for repeat borrowers, but also for people going through the process the first time. How do you borrow for 4 years? Do you borrow 4 years at once? Do you borrow one loan? Do you get a line of credit and you just keep adding to it? And essentially, the answer is that you apply on a yearly basis for the most part. You can apply on a semesterly basis as well. There's no real obvious benefit to doing so unless that's the way you like to do it. But most folks tend to apply on a yearly basis. For MEFA, I can say that you'll do the application, you say, hey, this is my loan period. If it's for the full year, it might be something like August through May, of, you know, August 2020 through May of 2021. And then you've requested an amount for that year. Your credit's pulled, you get your decision, you pick your loan, and that gets dispersed to the college as the college requests it. Typically, colleges want to be paid per semester. So they get one payment in the fall to pay the fall semester, the next one in the spring to pay the spring semester. The next year, you're going to do that same process all over again. So you're not actually adding to the loan that you had in a prior year. It's a new loan altogether. Next year's loans probably have different rates, different interest rates, maybe different terms. And when, if you borrow every year for 4 years, you're going to graduate with four separate loans. Now, people get concerned about that because they think they'll have to make four separate payments. You do not. You make one payment. They're all itemized on one bill. If you do want to combine them all into one loan, there are refinance options that you can use at that point, but that's a whole other category, frankly. For the purposes of this question, one loan is, you know, 1 year equals one loan, basically. And I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Jonathan.
No, I would, you explained it very well. It's, you know, it's kind of that year by year basis. And yeah, that question we get a lot is, am I now looking at four separate loans? Yes, but the consolidated billing statement. You know, I guess the one thing I would add, and I think we mentioned this in a former episode, but just to reiterate, rates are very low this year as a result of everything that is happening. And so, you know, we always make sure to tell students and families, you know, first borrow those federal loans, the direct subsidized for the student that's just their loan, and then if and when you need to get to the private, you know, certainly MEFIT has some great rates. We have some great ones this year, but you'll notice across the board some really good rates this year, and so, you know, if ever a time to borrow, you know, at least you'll be able to get some pretty good rates, which is good.
Yeah. That's a very important point. I'm glad you brought it up. And how appropriate, by the way, some personal news, how appropriate that this is our topic when guess who paid off his federal student loan this month?
Well, it wasn't me. And you're the only one on the show. So I'm guessing it was.
If you're not watching this and you're listening to it, my thumb is pointing to my face. It's very exciting.
Well, congratulations. Very, very exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. After 20 years of repayment, I think.
Yeah. There you go.
But you know, this means I can no longer, scare high schoolers when I say, right, look at me, look at my face, I'm still paying my student loans, and they get panicked. So those days are over, but that's okay, I'll take it.
There you go. Well, congratulations. It's great. Does it feel good?
Yes.
Feels good.
It feels great. Yeah.
It feels great. Exactly.
I know. Now I can start saving for my son.
There you go.
And I mean,
spoiler alert, future episode, savings.
That's right. Thank you. But back to our borrowers. Our next question comes from Kenneth, who wants to know, he writes, we're about to apply for our first student loan for my daughter's second year of college. So I guess they were able to pay outright for the first year, which is great. I understand that we should borrow the amount we need for the entire school year, not just the fall semester. Whereas we only have an estimate of the spring costs, what happens if we borrow too much? Also, please describe how we actually pay the college with the student loan funds. Like, do we end up paying with a line of credit that we draw from for the two semester bills? Okay. So a little bit of overlap from the last question, but it's important to respond to that. It's not similar to a line of credit. We can only send funds directly to a college. So how they actually pay the college, we don't send money to the parents, we don't send money to the students, we send money to the college, and the college can really only accept what is owed by the student. So they have to certify that the student is enrolled before they can take any money from us. They have to certify that the student is enrolled, the dates in which they want the money, and also that the loan funds are not in excess of what's required. So cost of attendance minus any other financial aid, you know, that's your window for MEFA loan money. So, and typically people do apply for a year at a time, and colleges cannot hold on to money for multiple years and apply it. So that's another reason. So basically we send it to them, they credit the student's account. So, and I also want to include a question that I've received on this in this summer, a couple of times, a few people have asked about this. People who are borrowing for a second or third year, or maybe they have another child coming in, they say, is there a dollar limit that you cut me off at? And they say, you can't borrow any more money. No, there's not a dollar limit that we cut you off at. Every process, every loan process, as we said prior, it's the same. So as long as you have sufficient credit and sufficient income and you're requesting the loan money, if you're approved, you're approved. And really the college is the one that acts as the safeguard on that, that they're not getting too much funds to pay the college bill. But there is not a sort of aggregate limit over which we will not, approve you for loan money. Now to circle back to the first part, you have one semester bill. This is the question of, should you borrow per year per semester? And then also if you only have the bill for one semester, how much do you know? How can you know how much to borrow for the year? So yeah, maybe you have a fall semester bill. If you double that, you can expect that that's probably around what your yearly bill is. If it happens that you end up applying for more than you need, you can always call us up and lower that amount. So you can call us up, as long as it's not, the day before it's supposed to go out, within a certain amount, you can call us up and reduce that loan amount. It's very easy to do so. Or the college may reduce that on their end as well. Even afterwards, if we already send the funds to the college and it's more than you need, you should contact the financial aid office at the college. They can always refund overages back to the lender, which will not just pay a principal on the loan, it will actually reverse the interest that's accrued on it as well. So it'll sort of like reverse the overage that you requested and fix it so that it was always a smaller amount to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And then, one thing I'll just add on that is, going back, and I wrote it down, especially for this year, right? Again, kind of so much is through the context of this year. But, when you spoke about the colleges and the certification process, so as you mentioned, it's, you apply, you're approved, and it essentially goes over to the college, right? Sits to be certified, so obviously this is all digital. So the school will then certify the loan. Now, as you can imagine, with deadlines being pushed out, billing deadlines, that's another thing, we could have mentioned earlier on, schools are pushing out billing deadlines. We've heard some as many as August 24th for the fall semester, which is kind of crazy because if you think the fall semester could start the next week, right? And so, because of that, there is for at many schools, a delay in processing loans, and we're seeing that at MEFA as well. Our peak season of seeing loans is basically pushed out 2 weeks, kind of from what we're seeing and the trends that we're seeing, because colleges have pushed out when they're making decisions. That impacts billing, because that impacts costs, which costs impact what you get the actual bill for, and then that's kind of a trickle-down effect for how much folks are borrowing. So just be aware of that. We get that question a lot, like, how long before I apply and it's the school certifying it? This year might be a little bit longer. It might be a little later than normal, simply because, some schools are waiting because they have to. So just one thing to be aware of. But again, if you ever have any questions, you can, after you apply for a loan, call us, call the school, and they'll tell you where your certification sits.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And I know the next question that comes up after that from families, if there is a bit of a delay in processing, the next question is about late fees, right? So, am I going to be subject to any late fees because of this? So I would hope that colleges would be understanding in this environment, in this atmosphere, and to contact your financial aid office with questions about that. Anecdotally, I'd say in my experience, colleges are usually pretty lenient with late fees if it's a situation where a loan is in flux somewhere. So But it's important to reach out, because they, you know, they are not going to waive it if they don't know that you're working on getting a loan. And also, if you do have more to disperse to the college than you need and need a refund, do that quickly too. Right. And the reason is, after a certain amount of time, it gets harder to reverse the interest on that loan. So if you know right away that there's too much being sent to the college, call the college, and it's too late to stop it on our end, call the college and have them refund it to us so we can reverse all the interest that accrued on that loan. Because after, I think it's 90 days or 120 days, it gets hard to do that. So just in general, keep on top of things. Don't be afraid to call the financial aid office. One of the key messages of all MEFA communications, don't be afraid to call the financial aid office's questions. So thank you. And our last question comes from, oh, it's also Kenneth. Kenneth is going to call. Thank you. Let's play two. Are there prepayment penalties if we're able to pay off the remaining balance before the original term ends? For example, if we take out the 15-year deferred option and 4 years after graduation, we're able to pay all of the loan off, are there any additional fees to consider? So this is a nice, positive and simple message. No. There are no prepayment penalties for paying off a loan early from MEFA or for federal. You can certainly do that. It's a good thing to do if you can, because if you pay a loan off early, it means that over the long run, you're going to be paying less over the life of the loan. So it's a good question to ask if you're looking at different loans in general. MEFA doesn't have any prepayment penalty. Federal loans don't have prepayment penalty. Mm-hmm. In fact, Jonathan, have you ever come across an educational loan that has a prepayment penalty? I have not, but I don't have same, but it's not common.
Yeah, very uncommon. I can't think of one off the top of my head. And if you think, no. So I very rare. Sure. If they do it.
Yeah.
But make, of course, always make sure, but very rare.
So that's a nice positive message to close the mailbag on. And we'll now segue into our main topic, which is loans. And certainly this is the time of the year where people are calling up families, calling up whether they want to talk to us for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, or for an hour. It's mainly about how they can finance the upcoming year and what's the best way to borrow, how do they start this process, what are the important things that they should be looking at. So, you know, I just wondered if you could give us, Jonathan, your impression so far this year, what families are asking you and what they need to know and what they should know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think it's, you know, as you mentioned, Jonathan, this time of the year, folks are researching loans. It's kind of loans is top of mind. And, you know, pandemic aside, obviously some new worries or concerns this year, or questions, should I say, but a lot of overlapping themes and similar questions to what we would hear in a normal year. And so, you know, some things that come to mind and some trends that I've noticed over the course of this year and even in years past that families ask, you know, so one big theme is folks, you know, when it comes to student loans, it's where do they start, right? And so they've gotten to the point where they've maximized all the free money and grants and scholarships. They've figured out what they can pay from savings. They've figured out what they can pay in a payment plan. And they've taken out the federal loans for the student. And they're at a point where it's like, okay, I know I need to borrow a private loan. Where do I start? So really there's a couple different places that you can go to figure that out or to research. You can go to individual private student loan lender websites, such as MEFIN, kind of see what we offer. You can use a, for a student loan aggregator, for lack of better words, Credible.com is one. You can go to Credible and put in your information, and it'll show you, based on your credit profile and the information that you put in, what loans you may qualify for. And so, you know, Credible only works with some lenders, so just be aware of that. It might not be the universe of lenders. And then a kind of a final place that you can go is to the actual college or university website. So a lot of colleges will have what's called a preferred lender list. That's just lenders that they work with who have meet certain criteria for their students and who they've been doing business with for a while. So it's preferred by the school certainly you don't have to utilize them. That's your choice. You can use whatever lender you would like. And some other schools won't have this preferred lender list. They'll have what's called a historical list. And so, you know, if their students in the past 5 years have borrowed from 60 different lenders, it's not that many, but call it 40, they'll list all 40. So, you know, you can go to the individual website of lenders, you can go to aggregators like a Credible, or you can go to the individual school. So that's, you know, that's kind of one theme or question I get or you hear a lot is where do I start? So that's, you can start there and you can go to those different places. Another theme that I hear from families a lot and speaking with students and families is, what do I look for, right? Like, if, all right, so what do I look for when it comes to applying for a private loan? You know, it's my first time. You know, maybe I've borrowed some other debt in the past, or maybe I haven't. Like, what do I look for when it comes to figuring out what loan is best to borrow? And so for that, you know, I would say that a student loan, much like any other debt, there's some key terms to know and some key things to be aware of. And so, you know, the first would be interest rate. So obviously you're going to look at what is the interest rate that's being offered. And that's a, you know, in speaking with families and just kind of, if you read research, that's a high percentage. I don't know what it is, but it's a high percentage of what drives the decision, what offers the best interest rate. And many of you already know this, but interest rate is really just the cost of borrowing money. So, you know, it's typically driven by credit score. And so the higher your credit score, the lower the interest rate and vice versa. So, you know, interest rate is one that's going to drive you looking for that, looking for the best interest rate. Within interest rate, you know, considering, is it a fixed or a variable interest rate? You know, the advantages of a fixed is that, you know, it's going to be the same interest rate for the life of the loan through repayment. Variable, as the name implies, will vary. And so variable rates are very low right now, some under 2%. But just know that you're looking at a rate that will change over the course of not only the time that you've borrowed it, but also the entire repayment term. And so just, you know, within interest rate, you know, being aware of those two. Another term or another, you know, when I talk to families about what to look for is repayment term. And so this came up earlier in the mailbag, but, you know, repayment term, depending on the particular lender, they will offer various repayment terms associated with loans. And so the repayment term just specifies the time you have to repay the loan. As we mentioned, there's no prepayment penalties, but you certainly want to feel comfortable knowing that whatever term you choose, you can meet your repayment obligation in it. So, you know, on the MIFA side, we have 10 and 15 year. Some lenders will offer 7 years. Some will go out to 20 years. But repayment term is another really important term to look for when you're going through the private student loan comparison. And then the last kind of under the what to look for category, you know, interest rate, repayment terms, another big one for families is does the loan require a co-borrower? And a co-borrower is someone who, in many cases, it's a parent or a guardian who is also equally responsible for repayment of the loan. Now, for most students who are going to school, 18 to 22 year olds, if falling in that age bracket, they will need a co-borrower on the loan simply because they don't have established credit history. And so, you know, having that co-borrower allows them to not only apply for their loan, but also be approved for the loan. And so, you know, those there's other terms to be aware of, and there's other things to consider, but interest rate, repayment term, and does it require a co-borrower are very important ones. And for what I tell families all the time, if they're kind of looking at loans for the first time. So that's another trend. And then the last one, and we touched on this already a little bit, but is families really, there's a lot of confusion about how it works, right? Like how does this all work, right? Like I apply for this loan, I don't get it myself, right? I do, but it's in my name, but how does it work? And I think you outlined that earlier, Jonathan, very well. You know, in many cases, in many lenders, it's the loan proceeds, you apply, it's in your name, but the funds are going to the college. So you never actually see the check. You obviously see the debt because you have to repay it, but you don't see that money. It's kind of a process that goes right over to the school. So if I had to capture those themes, it's you know, where to, number one theme families talk a lot about or ask a lot about is, where do I start? The second is kind of what to look for. And the third is kind of how it all works out once they apply for the loan.
Yeah, that's great. One thing I would say too is the question of deferment, right? Yeah. So a lot of people know when they have to want to know when they have to start making these payments. Is it in school? Is it until the student leaves school? They don't have to start, and that depends. It depends on the type of loan that they're qualified for, and you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, I think people assume that they won't have to repay until after the student leaves college. So just to be aware of the terms of the loan that you're applying for or accepting. And now we do have some resources on MIFA.org that we can help folks figure all this out. Do you want to talk about some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a recorded webinar all about student loans. I think it's What to Know About Student Loans is the name of it. And so we talk a lot about some of the factors that I had mentioned a little bit earlier, go a little deeper dive into some of those. And then we also talk about ways to be a wise borrower. We have this, you know, kind of, how do you be a wise borrower? How do you be smart about it? And, you know, without getting too much into the details, but yeah, we talk about, it's important to minimize borrowing, right? It's important to assess the affordability of the loan before you actually take it out. You know, we talk about staying on top of timing and deadlines and things of that nature. So, you know, we have a really great webinar that does a deep dive. So I encourage you to look at that. And then we also have two really good blog posts that take that webinar and kind of break it out a little bit more. One is about 6 ways to be a wise borrower. And the other one is, I believe, 5 key terms to know about student loans. So we try to break it down. We talk about it in the webinar, then we break it down into 2 blog posts, and we're talking about it here. So, you know, however you like to learn about things. But those are great because it's you know, it kind of breaks down in different ways. And then we also, if you are looking in particular for the MIFA student loan, we have a really good loan calculator that you can actually put in some information years before graduation, and it'll show you an estimated repayment amount based on how much you're borrowing and the repayment plan that you choose. So, you know, try to make it as transparent as possible, both with our individual loan at MIFA, but also just good information in general, no matter where you end up borrowing.
Yeah, and I think that monthly payment calculator is kind of where I want families to end up.
Yes.
Especially when they're making decisions as to how much they're going to borrow to go to school, which college they're going to pick. You know, I'll say to go to the MIFA loan payment recalculator, put in your amount that you're going to borrow this year, see what your monthly payment is, multiply that by 4. Yep. Because remember, this is year one of probably 4 years, but maybe 2, maybe more than 4, depending on the degree. And what's that monthly payment? And is that doable to you? Can you get there? And okay, if not, what is it that needs to happen in order for you to be able to afford that? The other thing is that when I speak with parents, I want them to know that, as I always say, there's no such thing as just a co-applicant, right? If you're a co-applicant on the loan, you're equally responsible as well with the student, because a lot of times, you know, people call up and they'll say, I know I'm on the loan, it's not really my loan, I'm just a co-applicant, it's really her loan. But you know, that's on your credit report as a co-applicant. So this is important to you personally, not just, you know, to the student who hopefully has borrowed their federal loans first before coming to the MIFA or another third party lender. So, you know, this is your monthly payment as well as students' monthly payment. So is this something that you can handle? And then the other thing is, if graduate school is a certainty or looks to be a certainty at this point, make sure that if you have a deferred loan, that it, you know when that goes to into repayment. A lot of times people assume undergraduate deferred loans can be deferred through graduate school, and it's not always the case. So just make sure that you're aware of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the grad school point, you know, I think it's also important too, because generally speaking, there's less financial aid available, less free money for graduate school. It's going to be more loan heavy. And so, yeah, just thinking in terms of 4 years, absolutely, but maybe even beyond that in grad school. So yeah, definitely all good things to consider.
And consider in time too, and before year one. Right? A lot of people kind of just kind of try to stretch every dollar through year one and think, well, I'll worry about the second year when it happens. But you know, the time to really look at that is before. So it's really where I think families should be looking at before they make that decision as to what is it, can I handle this monthly payment after 4 years? But I think that's you know, definitely important to steer folks to the blog and to all the curriculum that we have on being a wise borrower. Definitely the biggest part of that being not borrowing more than you have to borrow. I would tell families that it's better to stretch what you can pay out of pocket, you know, while the student is in college, it's going to go further. So is there anything else we should add to that, you think?
No, you know, the last thing I'll mention is that we recognize, you know, we talk about this all the time, so it's second nature to us. We recognize it might be the first time for you folks listening. So always please reach out, take advantage of the resources, as we always say, and will always be the case. Everything at MEFA is free. And so certainly reach out if you have questions, because that's what we're here for. And hopefully we answered some of your questions throughout this today, but you know, we available to have a conversation about your particular situation for sure.
That's good. And then again, the information is collegeplanning@mefa.org. 1-800-449-MEFA is the phone number. You can connect with us on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, it's @MEFATweets. Anyway, as you say, any way that's convenient for you to contact us and to have this conversation, we want to be able to do that, with the obvious exception of in person these days. But other than that, I think that's the show. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions, as Jonathan said, please reach out to us, connect with us, visit the website to see any tools that we talked about or more that we haven't. And of course, please subscribe to the podcast. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening.